When I was a schoolboy at the Waverly School in Monongahela, Peg Hill told us that David Farragut, the U.S. Navy's very first admiral, had been commissioned midshipman at the ripe old age of 10 for service on the warship Essex. Had Farragut been a schoolboy like me, he would have been in fifth grade when he sailed for the Argentine, rounding the horn into action against British warships operating along the Pacific coast of South America. Farragut left a description of what he encountered in his first sea fight. Quote, "I shall never forget the horrid impression made upon me at the sight of the first man I had ever seen killed. It staggered me at first, but they soon began to fall so fast that it appeared like a dream and produced no effect on my nerves." Unquote. The poise a young boy is capable of was tested when a gun captain on the port side ordered him to the wardroom for primers. As he started down the ladder, a gun captain on the starboard side, opposite the ladder, was struck full in the face by an 18-pound shot, his headless corpse falling on Farragut. Quote, "We tumbled down the hatch together. I lay for some moments stunned by the blow, but soon recovered consciousness enough to rush up on deck. The captain, seeing me covered with blood, asked if I were wounded, to which I replied, 'I believe not, sir.' Then he said, 'Where are the primers?' This brought me to my senses, and I ran below again and brought up the primers." Close quote. The Essex had success. It took prizes. Officers were dispatched with skeleton crews to sail them back to the United States. And at the age of 12, Farragut got his first command when he was picked to head a prize crew. I was in the fifth grade when I read about that. Had Farragut gone to my school, he would have been in the seventh. You might remember that as a rough index of how far our maturity has been retarded even 50 years ago. Once at sea, the deposed British captain rebelled at being ordered about by a boy and announced he was going below for his pistols, which as a token of respect he'd been allowed to keep. Farragut sent word down that if the captain appeared on deck armed, he would be summarily shot and dumped overboard. He stayed below. So ended David Farragut's first great test of sound judgment. At 15, this unschooled young man went hunting pirates in the Mediterranean. Anchored off Naples, he witnessed an eruption of Vesuvius and studied the mechanics of volcanic action. On a long layover in Tunis, the American consul, troubled by Farragut's ignorance, tutored him in French, Italian, mathematics, and literature. Consider our admiral an embryo. I'd be surprised if you thought his education was deficient in anything a man needs to be reckoned with. When I was a schoolboy in Monongahela, I learned how Thomas Edison left school early because the school thought him feeble-minded. He spent his early years peddling newspapers. Just before the age of 12, he talked his mother into letting him work on trains as a train boy, a permission she gave which would put her in jail right now. A train boy was apprentice of all work. Shortly afterwards, a printer gave Edison some old type he was about to discard, and the boy, successfully begging a corner for himself in the baggage car to set type, began printing a 4-page newspaper the size of a handkerchief about the lives of the passengers on the train and the things that could be seen from its window. Several months later, 12-year-old Edison had 500 subscribers, earning a net profit monthly of about 25% more than an average schoolteacher of the day made. When the Civil War broke out, the newspaper became a gold mine. Railroads had telegraph facilities, so the war news was available to Edison as quickly as to professional journalists, but he could move it into print sooner than they could. He sold the war to crowds at the various stops. The Grand Trunk Herald sold as many as 1,000 extra copies after a battle at prices per issue from a dime to a quarter, amassing Edison a handsome stake. Unfortunately, at the same time, he had been experimenting with phosphorus in the baggage car. One thing led to another, and Edison set the train on fire. Otherwise, there might never have been a light bulb. When I was a schoolboy in Monongahela, I learned with a shock that the men who won our revolution were barely out of high school by the standards of my time. Hamilton was 20 in The Retreat from New York. Burr, 21. Light Horse Harry Lee, 21. Lafayette, 19. What amounted to a college class rose up and struck down the British Empire, afterwards helping to write the most sophisticated governing documents in modern history. When I was a schoolboy in Monongahela, I learned the famous Samuel Pepys, whose diary is a classic, wasn't just an old gossip, but president of the Royal Society, the most prominent association of scientists in existence in the 17th century. He was also secretary of the Admiralty. Why that's important to our investigation of modern schooling is this. Pepys could only add and subtract right up to the time of his appointment to the Admiralty, but quickly learned to multiply and divide to spare himself embarrassment. I took a different lesson from that class than the teacher intended, I think. At the age of 5, when I entered the first grade, I could add, subtract, and multiply because Dad used to play numbers games with my sister and me in the car. He taught me the mastery of those skills within a matter of a few hours, not years and years as it took in school. We did all calculations in our heads with such gusto, I seldom use a pencil today even for much more intricate computation. Pepys verified my father's unstated premise. You can learn what you need, even the technical stuff, at the moment you need it, or shortly before. Sam Pepys wasn't put in charge of Britain's sea defense because he knew how to multiply or divide, but because he had good judgment, or at least was thought so.